This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
The European Union's climate agency says Earth was record hot in March. The climate scientists attribute most of the record heat to human-caused climate change, from carbon dioxide and methane emissions.
March 2024 was the hottest March on record and the 10th record-breaking month in a row. Thanks to man-made climate change, rising temperatures are fully expected. But climate scientists are struggling to explain why the world has been this warm for this long. So what's going on? Is this a blip? Or could something more sinister be happening to our climate?
We have changed the climate. The climate is now in a different state than it was 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Things are actually going to change in different ways kind of from now on.
This is in the news from the Irish Times. I'm Bernice Harrison. Today, I talk to climate expert Gavin Schmidt about the unexplained rise in global temperatures. Gavin, we've invited you onto the podcast because we know you're highly qualified to talk about climate change, but can you introduce yourself to our listeners? What do you do and where do you do it?
Yes, well, thank you very much for having me on. My name is Gavin Schmidt. I'm a climate scientist, have been for a few decades now. I work at the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies here in New York City. And I work mostly on building large simulations of the climate, trying to put in all of the different things that are going on, trying to make large numerical simulations of these things to try and understand why things are changing. And once we've understood why things are changing, why they're going to continue to change and what's going to happen with that. And those kinds of tasks, you know, we're always taking data from the observations, we're always trying to encapsulate new phenomena or new things that we think of as being important. And then we're always comparing the simulations that we make with the observations of those large scale processes. We're always looking for things that don't quite fit, but also like being quite surprised when we do manage to explain what's going on. Because, these are complicated, imperfect beasts that we're building, but they are actually quite skillful.
Well, I want to read the opening paragraph of a recent article you wrote for Nature magazine. You wrote, "When I took over as the director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, I inherited a project that tracks temperature changes since 1880. Using this trove of data, I've made climate predictions at the start of every year since 2016. It's humbling and a bit worrying to admit that no year has confounded climate scientists' predictive capabilities more than 2023 has." So, Gavin, in other words, in 2023, the climate didn't behave the way climate scientists such as yourself expected. How inaccurate were the 2023 predictions of climate modellers relative to previous years?
Okay, so let's take a step back and try and work out why we think we can predict, you know, how warm any one year is going to be, right? So we know that there's these big long-term trends, right? You know, we've seen these trends since the 19th century. We're like 100% sure that's being caused by our emissions of greenhouse gases. And so they're there. They're not going away, and they won't go away until we stop emissions. Okay, but then what else is going on? Right. So what we found is that if you start off a year with an El Nino event, those are a kind of a sloshing of warm water along the equator from, you know, South America to Indonesia. And it kind of flops along, I guess. And that turns out to have very large scale effects. It affects the tropics and then it affects the rest of the world. And generally speaking, what we've seen in the record is that when you start off with an El Nino, then you have a year that is warmer than the trend. Here's the trend, and then there's a little bit extra because there's an El Nino. And now the La Nina, that's the opposite phase, right? So that's a cold phase near South America. And so you expect, well, there's the trend, and you expect it to be a little bit cooler than the trend. So at the beginning of every year, and I started doing this, you know, maybe a decade ago, you can make an estimate of what's going to happen because we have good predictions of what El Nino is going to be a few months in advance, right? So that's one of the triumphs of climate science, that we can make those kind of, you know, 6-month predictions about what's going to happen to El Nino. And so at the beginning of the year, you have a prediction for what's going to happen in the next few months, and you have the state that there is right then. And you can say, okay, well, if we're in a La Nina, it's going to be a little bit colder. If we're in an El Nino, it's going to be a little warmer. You add on the trend, that gives you an estimate of where the year is going to end up. And it worked really well. So in 2015, predicting what 2016 was going to be like, we were starting with this big El Nino. And I said, oh, well, you know, it's very likely to be a record warm year. There had been other record warm years that had happened before because of that starting with the El Nino. And that prediction was spot on. That worked out every year since then until, you know, the beginning of 2023. And at the beginning of that year, we were in the cool phase. We were in the La Nina phase. And so that, going on past evidence, would suggest that we would see a year that was slightly cooler than the long-term trend. But things started to change in ways that were not anticipated there. We started to see in March record warm temperatures in the North Atlantic. By June, that was record warm temperatures around the world. In the Southern Hemisphere winter, the sea ice was dramatically lower than it had ever been. And then kind of in August, September, then we started to see an El Nino start to occur, and then that kind of built up towards the rest of the year. And so we ended up with a year that was not just a little on the trend or a little bit below the trend, was massively above the trend. And that was totally unexpected. And there are multiple ways that people have done that prediction, right? So I did it using relatively straightforward statistics. Other people have slightly more sophisticated statistics. Some people have, you know, big complicated models that they initialize and then they run through. All of those prediction methods failed completely, right? Yeah, so you know, a prediction, you know, you make an estimate of where you're going to be, and then you've got some uncertainty around that because, you know, everything is not perfect. And so 2023 was way outside the error bounds of everybody's prediction. And that had never happened before, right? So going back, you know, as far back as we've been doing this, we've never failed so badly. So there's a question there. Oh, what's going on? What's going on?
Well, actually, what is going on? Because if it's not just El Nino, what could it be? Are there any theories about what could be going on? Like, is there a best case scenario?
You know, scientists are great at coming up with theories, right? You know, they sit around in their rooms and, you know, basically they generate theories all the time. And so there's lots. There are ideas that there was a big volcano 2 years ago, the Hunga Hapai volcano, and that put an unusually large amount of water vapor into the stratosphere. Water vapor in the stratosphere is a greenhouse gas, has a warming effect, but there were other things that it put into the stratosphere as well, like sulfur dioxide and sea salt that were cooling effects. And so some people said, oh, well, it's obviously, that volcano is having an extra impact, and so that's giving us a little bit of a boost. Okay, that's a theory. Other people have said, well, Chinese pollution has gone way down and we haven't been tracking that very well. And you know what? This is all about Chinese pollution, you know, changing the temperatures in the Pacific and things. And I go, okay, that's a theory. Other people have said, well, it's the marine shipping emissions. So it turns out that in 2020, there was a new regulation put out by the International Maritime Office that said you could only you couldn't burn really dirty fuel anymore. You had to burn cleaner fuel. And that cut the amount of sulfate pollution, sulfur dioxide from these ships by about 80%, literally from 1 week to the next. There's a bunch of people who think that is the explanation. Then there are other explanations. Well, it's just a combination of things that just happen, and they all happen to line up. And it's just never happened before. It's just a very rare event. It'd be a blip, you know, something happening in the North Atlantic with the Saharan dust and the wind circulation, something happening in the Southern Ocean that's different from that, plus the El Nino that's happening. And so, you know, you can explain it by adding up all of those little different things.
Okay, and do you have a particular one that sits with you best?
So the way that you should look at this is, where's the data? Where are the estimates of how big an effect any one of these things is? People have worked on these things, right? So people have calculated the impact of the volcano. They have calculated the impact of these marine shipping emissions. People are looking at the Chinese emissions. People are looking at... But as of yet, there are no published estimates of any of these effects that come anywhere close to explaining the gap between what we expected and what we got. That's concerning, and it's concerning for a number of reasons, right? One is, you know, we thought we knew something, and now it's clear we didn't, right? So that's unsettling for a scientist. But the second thing is, you know, some of those things have implications for the future, and some of them do not, right? So if it's just a blip, just random little things that happen that all happen to line up at once, then that's very unlikely to happen again. And we can just like kind of expect everything else to just kind of go back to normal, which is not normal because we've got this massive anthropogenic trend. If it's the aerosols, either from the ships or from China, then okay, well, then that's something that's going to be with us, right? That's effectively a step up. And then maybe we're going to continue on from there. But it is something that we need to keep track of. If it's the volcano, that's not going to have much of a long-term impact. So it kind of matters. And then there's another possibility, which is that we have changed the climate. The climate is now in a different state than it was 50 years ago, 100 years ago. It's conceivable that the patterns and the empirical connections that we can derive from the past, from all the data that we had going back decades, it's possible that those conclusions are no longer valid. It's possible that things are actually going to change in different ways kind of from now on. And that's more worrying because it means that we can't really look to the past to make confident predictions for the future. And that's really a fundamental thing.
Gavin, I was struck by a particular timeline in your article in Nature. And again, I'm going to quote yourself back to you. You wrote, "If the anomaly does not stabilize by August," and by that you mean this August, "a reasonable expectation based on previous El Nino events, then the world will be in uncharted territory." That's a disquieting possibility.
Okay, so right now the El Nino is fading, right? So, you know, it has maybe a couple more months to go as an El Nino, but by the summer, we'll be back down at neutral conditions and we may even go into another La Nina by the end of the year. We'll see. But right now it's kind of coming down off that peak. And generally speaking, the temperature anomalies will follow that with a lag of a couple of months, 3 months maybe. So the peak temperatures that we saw in February and March, they're really responding to what was happening in the Pacific in December and January. So, you know, now we're in April. Okay, well, things have already started to come down from 3 months ago. So April might be a record warm month, but it's going to be a little bit closer. May almost certainly won't be. June won't be, et cetera. Now, that's based on that past experience. If that doesn't turn out, if indeed we find that April also a record month, May also a record month, June still a record month, right? Okay, then there's no expectation for that, right? And so that will be a very clear signal that it isn't a blip, that something else has changed, something has shifted. And that we need to obviously track that down as fast as we can so that we can build that into the expectations going forward.
Now, news about extreme weather is still coming, it seems every week. March 2024, as you said, was the hottest March ever. And it was the 10th month in a row to break its record. On one day in March, a weather station in the Antarctic was 38.5 degrees centigrade warmer than the average. That's 38.5 degrees. To you, and you've mentioned the word blip, does that sound part of a blip? Or could it just be a new reality that we all have to try to wrap our heads around?
You know, like we talk about these numbers, they don't sound like very big numbers, right? So the the anomaly that I'm concerned about with 2023 is about a 0.2 degrees Celsius anomaly. And you go, okay, well, that, how is that important? Why is that? That's tiny, right? You know, and the difference that we're seeing from the 19th century is 1 degree, like 1.5 degrees, right? You know, these are not large numbers, right? I'm sure the temperature in your studio has moved by more than that just since you've been sitting in there, because we're radiating energy. But they are important for on the scale of a planet, because it turns out that planets have pretty stable temperatures, right? The planet as a whole, you know, that up and down on an annual basis is around 0.1 to 0.15 degrees Celsius. That's the size of the anomalies. And so a 0.2 number, that's hard. Like 1 degree, that's a big number. 1.5 is a big number. You know, one can put it in context with the last ice age, right? So the last ice age was the last time that the planet was really very different to today. About 20,000 years ago, the ice sheet covered almost all of the British Isles, I think including most of Ireland. Massive amount of ice on land, you know, with tundra for thousands of miles to the south, woolly mammoths, cavemen, you know, you have that picture in your mind. Temperature change in the last glacial maximum was only about 5 to 6 degrees Celsius colder than the pre-industrial, right? And so we have changed, and it took like 10,000 years to warm up into the Holocene, right? And we have changed our climate by about a quarter of that same magnitude, but in the space of 100 years. That was a totally different planet, right? Almost unrecognizable. Where we might be headed if we don't get our act together is the same again, potentially, but in the other direction. And again, would be a totally different planet, but far more rapidly than those natural changes. And so when people are talking about, you know, 1 degree, 1.5 degrees, you know, 0.2 degrees, right, these sound like small numbers, but in the context of the planet, they're massive.
Look, as you say, we're on course for catastrophic warming anomaly or no anomaly, unless radical changes are made, unless, as you say, we get our act together. But are you optimistic or pessimistic that we can do enough to get on top of this problem? Are we even equipped to now at this point?
There are a lot of positive signs, right? You know, if you look at the rollout of renewable energy, wind, solar, geothermal, it's going up by leaps and bounds. If you look at the market for coal, right? So in the UK, they burnt less coal last year than they had in any time since the 1700s, right? Mm. That was the birth of the Industrial Revolution. So the notion that we can't do better seems a little bit odd. We can do better, and we are doing so, but it's not equally distributed, right? So China has been building out coal instead of pulling it down. India as well, but in the US, it's going way down. Japan is going way down. There are technologies, there are strategies, there are things that work, but they just need to be spread out more equitably. You know, we are trying very hard. Like we're doing this podcast remotely. I'm not having to travel to Dublin to be with you. We can do a lot more like this. That allows for a lot better conversations and a lot better interactions than we were able to do before. All of those things are good. We can be more efficient. We can design our cities better. We can invest more in public transport. We can get on our bikes. We can get on our e-bikes, right? I'm a big fan of e-bikes right now. There are things that are happening. Are they happening fast enough? No. But there are more and more governments in Europe and around the world that are making better decisions. So I'm mildly optimistic, not that we're going to turn this around on a dime, but that, you know, there's enough people pushing in the right direction for us to kind of eventually turn the corner.
That's it for today. For more Irish Times journalism, including coverage of the climate crisis, subscribe at irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Bernice Harrison. This episode is produced by Declan Conlon. In the news, we'll be back tomorrow.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.